It might seem like there are always jobs to be done in the garden, but I'd like to invite you to hang up your rake for an hour, grab a cup of tea, and tune into The Kitchen Garden with me, Francis Nesbitt, every Monday and Friday from 4 to 5. We'll be talking all things food with some very special guests each week on Community Radio Kilkenny City, 88.7 FM. And you're very welcome to The Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. And I am Francis Nesbitt from Crowine Cottages in Kilkenny. And you're very welcome. The show is live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. And it's repeated every Monday from 4 to 5. And I'd love to hear from you while I'm on air. So please feel free to get in touch by text to 086-353-7782. Or you can phone the station on 776-2777. Or you can email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. at any stage during the week. Now, it's a busy show today. There's lots of nature and food news to get through, but I'm delighted that today I'm going to be joined by Karen Nolan, and we're going to be talking about Your Local Food Network an initiative of Karen's that she set up recently. And we're also going to be joined then by Ollie Nolan, no relative, just a coincidence there, from Ollie's Farm. And we're going to be talking to Ollie about bees and honey. And of course, we've had Ollie on the show before, very knowledgeable and award winning indeed beekeeper in the Wicklow Hills, in Dublin Hills, sorry, I always make that mistake. And then later in the show, I'm going to be joined by garden writer Klaus Leitenberger, well-known contributor to Irish Garden Magazine and a garden designer. And we're going to be talking to him about what's happening in the garden consultant, sorry. And we're going to be talking to him about what's happening in the garden right now. And I want to have a chat with him about his recent travels because he's been all over South America. So we'll talk to him a little bit later about all of that. And of course, there's a list of jobs to be giving you to get on with in the garden at the end of the show. But first, some of the news items which caught my attention during the week. Of course, this is the week ahead of the bank holiday weekend, and not this weekend, but the following week, weekend, Bloom in the Park is on in Dublin. And it really is incredible how Bloom has grown over the years. It's in its 13th year now, and it's incredibly popular flower, food and family festival, really. It's no longer just a garden show, and it's it now attracts about 120,000, probably 140,000 visitors this year if the weather is kind. It's going to cover about a 70 acre site, and there are 22 show gardens ready for people to have a wander around, and I suppose you can judge them yourselves, or you can hear what the experts have said about those particular gardens. There's plenty of food and drink, of course, there available for everybody to enjoy. All of the big supermarkets will be there with their tents. It's almost like a small ploughing championship now for non-farmers, but for gardeners and city residents. It's all organised, of course, by Bord Bia, and they'll have a quality kitchen stage at the event this year. And well-known chefs like Nevin Maguire and Rory O'Connell, Catherine Fulvio, all of those will be there giving demonstrations during the day. And there's no charge for any of those demos. And of course, for fans of Gerry Daly, he'll also be on hand throughout the weekend, and he'll be giving some tips, and then there's lots and lots of panel discussions and so on. Now, there's details available on all of that on the Bord Bia website, because of course it's organised by those guys. One of the things that caught my eye at the show will be a couple of the show gardens dedicated to food and drink. So UCD have pulled together a garden for the show, and it's designed around the history of the Irish diet in plants, which I think would be really, really interesting. So you get to explore what the Irish have been eating over the millennia in a small little garden. 8,000 years of history, apparently, it covers. And gin is everywhere at the moment. It's very, very on trend. And the good people from Blackwater Gin have pulled together a garden at Bloom for this year's show, and it's going to be dedicated to the spirit. So I presume there'll be all sorts of botanicals there that people can have a sniff of that will that are used to flavour our gins. So that's Bloom, Bloom in the Park. It's going to be absolutely amazing. It runs next weekend, all weekend, and details are available on the Bord Bia website. Now, in Other news, slightly less happy news. This, you might have heard about African swine fever, and this is a really, really nasty virus that pigs can pick up very easily from each other or from pig carcasses or even pieces of cooked pork. And the Minister for Agriculture, Michael Creed, Minister for Agriculture and Food, indeed, has said that the introduction of African swine fever into Ireland, if it were to arrive here, would really devastate our pig industry. A lot of countries around the world are imposing importation restrictions on animals, on pigs that come from countries that are affected by African swine fever, in an attempt to protect their own populations of pigs, I suppose. And given that it's so easily transmitted, there are tight restrictions on pork meat that comes into the country, and we hope those continue to work. But the minister was highlighting another channel through which the virus might arrive in Ireland, and that's you and I bringing back the simple kind of ham sandwich that we might have bought to have on the plane, didn't use, and then we bring it back in our bags to our homes. If you live in the countryside, or if you carry this virus on you and then you go to visit a population of pigs or whatever, you may be a vector for the virus to get into the pig population. And Minister Creed wants us to leave the sandwiches behind. Don't bring them on the plane. Don't take the risk of bringing meat products into the country, particularly, of course, from countries that are already affected by the disease. So don't bring back your sandwich and don't bring back your salami, the minister has said. And let's face it, like when you visit Italy or France, it is very, very tempting to pick up some sausage or salami there that you wouldn't be able to get back home and bring it back. I know I've done it in the past, but given that I keep pigs out at Croan and the risk is there, I won't be doing it anymore, because Ireland has about 1.7 million pigs. And this is something that a lot of people don't realise, because the vast majority of those, 1.6999 million of those pigs, live indoors in very, very large sheds. And so it's the one farm animal that we don't really see as we travel around the country. But it's a very, very big industry, and it's worth about 660 million in exports to the Irish economy. So the message is, don't bring back your ham sandwiches or your exotic sausages from the markets of France or Italy or anywhere else that you go. Now, one more story before we take a little bit of music, and then I get Karen on the line to talk to us about your food network. A happier one, this. There has been a development. You might know that today is National Biodiversity Day, or International Biodiversity Day, indeed, and it's being celebrated all over the world. It was organised by the UN to encourage us to celebrate the biodiversity of the planet and to help protect it and to encourage education in schools and so on. And with that in mind, a handbook for students to explore biodiversity in their local parks has been produced. Now, this is produced by Dublin City Council in cooperation with Eco-UNESCO. And it's a handbook for primary school teachers, and it's to facilitate those teachers using a local park or indeed the grounds of the school as an outdoor classroom in order to discuss biodiversity and the importance of it. And it also enables school children then, as part of that lesson, to discuss plants, vegetation, water and aquatic life, other wildlife inhabitants, and indeed insects. So it's produced by Dublin City Council. It's available from their website, and if you do a search for Eco-UNESCO or just handbook, biodiversity handbook for schools, you'll be able to find it very easily. And although it's produced by Dublin City Council, of course, it can be used anywhere in the country. And it's something that I know the local school out in Dunamagan does a lot of. They're going for their fifth green flag. And my little boy, Charlie, was on the committee for that. Very proud of him when he went out to pick up the flag recently. And a lot of schools are involved in the green flag program. But if teachers wanted to take the kids outside and do a little work in an outside classroom, that guide might be useful for them. Now, we're going to take a little bit of music. I thought this was appropriate on the day that's in it, given that it's National Biodiversity Day. The most important or the easiest thing that we can do to encourage biodiversity in our gardens is to just leave things alone. We don't need to do lots and lots of planting. We don't need to do specialised pruning or anything like that. If we just leave a little area managed for wildlife, so allow some wildflowers to grow, allow the grass to get a little bit longer, and indeed if farmers all left as much land as they could, maybe in awkward out-of-the-way places or along strips of the hedgerows, if they just left them alone, nature would kind of look after itself, and it gives a habitat and some food for our pollinators and other insects, and then of course the birds that eat them. So maybe we should just let things be a little bit.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be. Let it be, whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. Let it be.
Let it be.
Let it be indeed. And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City with me, Francis Nesbitt. Let it be indeed. Just leave a little piece of your garden or farm to nature, and then we can help protect what our biodiversity and our beautiful countryside. Now, I'm joined on the line by Karen Nolan, who is the illustrator and founder of Your Local Food Network, yourlocalfood.net. Hi, Karen. How are you?
Hi, Francis.
Thanks very much for joining us on the show today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Delighted to be able to speak to you today.
Now, Karen, I've been following you on social media for a little while now, and I know that the mission of your local food network is to promote sustainable production and trading, but also the consumption of seasonal and local food. So how did the idea come to you?
Well, it started about 3 years ago. Basically, a group of us here in Wexford, we were looking to buy local food, local organic food, and it was very hard to come by. Mm-hmm. We had a small market, and it didn't really have much on offer. You know, one or two stalls, but really it really wasn't what we were looking for. We wanted something a bit more. So we thought we might kind of hold a meeting, community meeting in the local library. So we put up a few posters and asked, you know, are you interested in buying local food? Come along and we'll have a chat. Thinking, you know, a couple of us would sit around the table and we'd have a bit of a brainstorm. But actually 70 people turned up. So that was a bit of an eye-opener. Obviously there was a demand, and we weren't the only ones that were looking for organic local food. So that's really what sparked the idea. And we did try and take it a little bit further and find a hub, to actually a physical hub to actually house some sort of community market. But that just proved too difficult. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided to go online and have a digital hub. So that's what the directory is, really. It's a digital hub. It's kind of step one, gathering information about who's selling what where, organic food-wise.
Once you get involved in bricks and mortar, it can get very, very difficult. And
then the
management of it and rates and all of that
exactly,
kind of stuff.
Exactly, yeah. And it just didn't prove feasible at that time. So we kind of... I mean, I know now there's other initiatives on in Ireland, such as Neighbour Food, which will enable people to work with a hub. But where we were in Wexford, and it's not really feasible. So like I said, this is step one, and who knows what will come out of this.
So you're pulling together at the moment a directory of producers that people can use to find out who's near them and buy direct. Are you also highlighting where other markets are, or other hubs, or other kind of places that gather together producers, or is it direct consumer to the producer?
Well, really, at the moment, it's just a directory of producers. That's what we're trying to populate, that section of the website. So it's just telling people who is selling what and where. So if you log on, say, to Kilkenny, you'll see Rings Farm, for instance, or Riversfield Organic Farm. And, you know, it's just because we found when we started talking about this ages ago that we didn't even know who was out there.
Yeah.
You know, I think step one is you need to identify who's there. And then I'm hoping, you know, people will come together and we can become a community and try and solve the problem of reaching consumers directly ourselves.
And there is a community element to the website as well, because I know that there are some blogs and stories up there from various contributors, aren't there?
There are, yes. Yeah, I have a regular contributor, Margaret Griffin. She talks about her small holding, and then I would be getting news from some of our members, so I'd be adding that up as well. So it's just trying to generate a bit of interest and to attract consumers, just to make it user-friendly, basically, so that people will visit the site and take more of an interest in what's happening.
Now, as the site is developing, of course, over time, there may be new producers emerging who are producing stuff which suits the website. So is it possible for people to recommend or suggest to you producers that can be added?
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, I'd love that. If just to get the word out there, that's the hardest thing, actually, to make people aware that the website is actually there. So, I mean, if anybody knows of anybody who is a local food producer that grows or farms without the addition of synthetic chemicals and have regard for the biodiversity of their small holding, then they're welcome to get in touch at info@yourlocalfood.net, and I would be delighted to have them on board.
Brilliant, brilliant. Now, it's not just about local producers and local food. There is a very ethical undertone to the whole website. So you want producers who do just that, consider the biodiversity of their holding and produce in an ethical way. And you've introduced the Simple Food Pledge. Can you tell us what that's about?
Well, the Simple Food Pledge is it's kind of a marketing tool, really. It's a set of principles that all of our producers have signed up to. And it's basically a promise to say that they farm or grow without the addition of synthetic chemicals, and that they do have consideration for the biodiversity as well. So this is what the pledge, if they display the pledge, then when you see it, you know straight away, well, this person is either organic or not using synthetic chemicals. So you'll have a more trust in their produce.
Great, right. Well, I think it's a fantastic initiative, Karen, and I'm really grateful for you coming on to tell us about it, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in the coming months to see how it's going and maybe discuss a bit more detail some of the Kilkenny producers that are on
there.
Yeah,
that'd be great. We have some supporters from Kilkenny as well, actually. The Cutting Veg.
Ah, Helen. Helen in the Cutting Veg. She's great.
Yeah.
Yes.
The vegan restaurant. And then we have this greengrocer.
The Little Greengrocer, a gorgeous shop on the high street here in Kilkenny, absolutely lovely.
And then Fenley's of Callan are also up there.
Ah, yes, near me, out near Crowan Cottages, the lovely Fenley's at Callan.
Gorgeous little coffee shop.
Yeah. It is. Well, if you're visiting them now, you have to drop by the cottages someday.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, if people want more information, you can find out about Your Local Food Network on yourlocalfood.net, on Twitter, at @WeAreYLFN, on Instagram, @WeAreYLFN, and on Facebook, Your Local Food Network. Karen, thanks a million for coming on and talking to us today about that.
Thank you so much, Francis. I'm delighted to be able to speak to you.
Great. And that's a fantastic initiative, I think, where it's a one-stop shop for letting consumers see who's near them producing not just good food, but producing that good food ethically. Now, we better take an ad break. A little late to the ads today, sorry about that. And coming up after the ads, I'm going to be talking to Ollie Nolan in the Dublin Hills all about his bees. Don't forget, you can get in touch with the show while I'm here on air live on Friday. You can text 086-353-7782, or you can email any ideas or suggestions you might have for somebody that we might talk to or a topic that we might cover any stage during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. We'll be back just after this. Text us on 086-353-7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here every Friday from 4 to 5 talking all things food and gardening. And if you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can. You can drop us a text to 086-353-7782, or you can call the station 7762777. Now, I'm delighted to be joined on the phone by my buddy in the Dublin Hills. I get it right. Ollie Nolan from Ollie's Farm. Ollie, how are you?
How's it going, Francis? Not too bad, thanks.
Good.
Finally, a bit of sun.
Yeah. Thanks a million for joining us today. How are the bees?
Great. Very, 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 very busy today for a change.
Well, it's
sort of hit and miss season.
A drizzly day earlier on in Kilkenny, but the sun was out when I was coming into the studio, and the girls will make the most of that, won't they?
Oh, they will indeed. They will indeed.
And
to see them out again.
A busy time of the year in the hive.
It's crazy busy at the moment. It's practically swarm season, and it's a little bit earlier than usual because of the mild spring. They all got very big very quick, and it's flat out at the moment trying to keep on top of them.
Now, you say swarm season. What exactly is going on there?
It's basically the bees' way of reproducing. So they're not 100% sure what actually triggers it, but it's a combination of the hive getting congested, not enough honey coming in, many different factors, and it's the way they basically reproduce. They decide they want to reproduce, and the old queen, in a nutshell, leaves with half the hive of bees to make a new home, and they actually make replacements then.
So it's as if the entire hive is a life form, and it's kind of like procreating itself. So like a cell splitting, it sends off a swarm of bees to find a new home elsewhere.
It is indeed, yeah. Usually the old queen leaves with about maybe 40 to 50% of the hive, and then the next queen that they have reared will hatch out, and she'll either basically become the new queen in the hive, or they might decide to swarm again, which would be called a cast swarm, which would be a little bit smaller. But if the beekeeper doesn't get in there and sort it out, it could actually leave you with no bees, because they'll keep on swarming, depending on the age of the queen cells.
I was going to say that it sounds like a lovely way for the bees to kind of procreate, but if you're a beekeeper and you're managing a hive and half or three quarters of the population of the bees run away, you're not going to get much honey out of that hive.
Well, yeah, that's really the whole point of it. You're sort of, like, if your hive swarms, that's your honey crop for the year practically gone.
Mm.
So, you know, like, it's really the beekeeper's job to manipulate them into thinking they have swarmed, or to encourage them not to swarm by basically giving them loads of space at the right time. And it's a very tricky balance, because if you don't give them enough, they, which is like, if you actually don't give them enough space, they'll swarm. If you give them too much space, it can actually set them back.
Right.
So, you know, like, it's a very fine balance, you know, besides keeping them sort of congested, but not too congested.
I did hear during the week that because of the amount of management, there is a bit more management involved now in keeping bees than there was a few years ago, I think. And a point was made on a show that I was listening to that the amateur beekeeper would have been able in the past to kind of manage up to 50 hives on a part-time basis. Jeez, I only have about 8, and I know I struggle to stay on top of it now. Around this time of the year, there's a lot to do with them, but there's a lot to do virtually all summer, really, isn't there?
There is, yeah. There's lots of things to do. So, you know, like, you basically begin in the spring, and you sort of go, like, in the spring, you've got to make sure the hive was like it actually survived through the winter, and you have to go through all the hives in the spring, make sure they have a queen, the queen is laying, and, you know, besides, like, that they've actually made it through the winter.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sort of fix the ones that haven't made it through the winter, usually combining them with a weaker hive to try and increase your stocks that way and maintain what you have. And then as you move through the season, sort of into the middle of April, May, you have the swarming season that you need to keep on top of, which is weekly inspections every 9 days. But when you work, as you say, and you have to sort of do it every 7 days, because you work Monday, you know, Monday to Friday, and you really only have the weekends to do it. So it's a bit more work that way, but it's like it is very rewarding.
Yeah, and one of the rewards that we get from the hive, of course, is honey. And your honey has been, well, it's been well rewarded itself, hasn't it? You've picked up a couple of awards over the last few years.
It's incredible, yeah. Starting with the first ever competition I entered back in 2017, Blossom Erin, I entered two honeys and they both made it to the final seven, and the heather got best in got gold and best food produced in County Dublin. And then again in the Great Taste last year, two of the honeys in the UK got two gold stars each.
That's amazing.
And then just after Christmas this year, got recommended as best in Ireland with the McKenna Guide.
That's fantastic. Now, I know,
I wasn't expecting that in the post at all.
Lots of people were sending you congratulations, Ollie, but of course we should really be congratulating the bees for
should indeed. Yeah, because the bees do all the hard work. You know, the bees are out collecting the nectar, bringing it home, and basically turning it into honey. And the pollen as well. Mm. Actually harvest a fair bit of pollen now this year.
Yeah, I saw that on...
Hard to do that last year.
Yeah, I saw it on your social media. Ollie is, if you don't follow him already, Ollie is on Twitter, Ollie's Farm, and he's on Facebook as well. And well worth following for the photographs and stories about the work that he does with the bees.
Oh, thanks, Robert.
And I saw you were harvesting pollen. Now, what exactly does that involve, Ollie?
Well, the bees use the nectar as their source of carbohydrate. Mm. So it's usually only the adult bee that would be consuming the honey, because they're actually fully mature. So it's the young larvae and the big bees are still basically growing, and they need a source of protein. So they collect the pollen off the plants as they're flying around, and they bring it back to the hive on their little pollen baskets, little hairs on their hind legs, mm-hmm. and they're in the form of a tiny little ball on each leg. And what I do is I have a little trap on the hive, and as the bee returns in, it goes into this little maze and knocks off the pollen into a little trap underneath, and I collect it and I dehydrate it and then clean it to remove it. Because the trap is right under the hive, loads of other stuff fall in with it from the hive debris, basically. The little particles of wax and all that, so you need to sort of go through it and sift it out and make sure you're just getting the pollen.
And what do you use that for then?
I actually had requests from people looking for it, that they were only able to get pollen from Spain and pollen from Romania and South America. Mm. So I looked into doing it, and I have a few customers looking for it now, and I'm hoping to expand that as well and increase some more and hopefully get some into the shops as well. At the moment, I'm only selling it from the farm and my online shop. Mm. But it just takes so long to actually prepare it for a jar, because you have to go through it basically with a tweezers and a credit card, sort of little piles at a time, going through it nearly grain by grain.
But you're no stranger to getting the family involved to help you there. I've often seen on social media.
I had my mom up actually for the last week, and she was helping me. She was here while I was at work making frames and getting things ready, cleaning jars and cleaning lids and getting everything ready for the next week.
That poor woman, every year I see her assembling frames on the website.
She comes up for her penance.
Well, she's earned an indulgence, I'm sure, at this stage now. But I've seen a few chefs, I think, using the pollen as a way of kind of decorating the dishes before they leave the kitchen. And it's a great thing to be able to say that you've added to the dishes as a garnish.
Yeah, and as well, I've got so many people looking for their allergies that want a much stronger kick. Because the sort of theory with the honey, with allergies, is you're actually ingesting pollen from your local area. So there's people that believe actually eating the pollen is a stronger kick out of it. And, you know, that's why they're sort of looking for it. But also, it's a complete food too. It's full of vitamins, minerals, and it's got a complete amino chain acid. So it's a complete protein. And people like to use that as a supplement. They put in their smoothies and their shakes and on their cereal.
Well, I suppose if it's the only thing that's been fed to the bee larvae and they're able to, you know, be raised on it, it must be a complete food indeed.
Mm.
Now, at this time of the year, I know I'm listed on a couple of websites as somebody who'll go and help people if they've a swarm of bees arrive at their house or in their garden. And I've had some interesting calls over the year, but I don't remember a week as busy at all over the last few years as this week has been with phone calls. The Irish beekeepers list people on their website who are willing to help if you get a swarm in your house, and Facebook is full of people offering to come and kind of help you with swarms of bees. Because, of course, if a beekeeper is able to take a swarm of bees from a tree in your garden, he's getting some free bees that he can set up into a new hive that maybe will work for him next year. Are you finding many people getting in touch with swarms of bees about the place, Ollie?
I am. I'm getting lots of people contacting me about swarms, but not from within about 20 kilometres from me. So I'm basically passing it on to other people. But there is a very good website now. A friend of mine has built swarms.ie.
Swarms.ie.
In Gallagher. And you basically register on that as a beekeeper. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, if you find a swarm, you put the details into this website, and it'll send a message, a text message, to the three nearest beekeepers. So it's pretty cool, like, idea. Because I think with swarms, a lot of the time, it's actually time is of the essence, because you need to get there before they take off again to their new home, which could be in someone's roof.
Yes.
You know.
Unfortunately, all the phone calls I'm getting at the moment aren't the nice, handy swarm of bees hanging from a low branch in a garden ready to go into a box. I'm getting the phone calls from the bees, or from people who've bees already moved into their attic or a hole in the cavity wall or something like that. So,
and they're just a nightmare to get out.
A bit more
difficult. Time is important that you get them, you know, like just when they settle after leaving the hive.
Yeah.
And they're in that nice, lovely cluster. Ideally about 2 meters off the ground, so you can just shake them into a hive. It's rarely that it's sort of that easy.
It's rarely that easy, although the easiest one I've ever had was hanging from a cannon in the barracks here.
That last year, the year before.
It was last year, I think, yeah.
I remember seeing that. That was pretty cool. That was a handy one.
So listen, Ollie, thanks a million for updating us on all of that. And I know you're a busy man with the Department of Ag to do some other jobs there at the farm. Ollie's Farm, you can check it out online, olliesfarm.com. And don't forget to give Ollie a follow on Twitter if you're on Twitter, at Ollie's Farm, and on Facebook as well. Ollie, we'll talk to you later in the year, I hope, about the bees, and I hope you have a great season.
Brilliant, Francis. Thanks so much for the call.
Now, at the moment, speaking of bees, there is a call from researchers in NUI Galway, and they've launched a new survey, and they'd like to invite people to report sightings of wild honeybee colonies across Ireland during the summer months. It was thought over the last few years that the number of wild colonies was collapsing, really. And that was because of the arrival of a nasty little mite called the Varroa mite, which the Irish bees, Apis mellifera, weren't really used to. So this mite, in comparison to the size of the bee, it would be like a human walking around with a Jack Russell or a medium-sized dog hanging off the body. And it's a parasite of the bee. So it hangs onto the bee, or a couple of them hang onto the bee, and it predates on the bee. It sucks out its blood during its life. And of course, it shortens the life of the bee in doing that. And not only that, this nasty little mite affects the larvae of the bee as well in the hive, and it can cause all sorts of diseases and malformations in the bee if the poor larvae ever develops into an adult. You see nasty wing disorders and stuff like that. So it's a nasty little thing. Beekeepers over the years have been controlling it, but only in the hives, of course, that they manage. And the wild hives didn't have any of that management. Their numbers dropped. What's happened, though, is that over the years, the bees that have survived this onslaught are better able to manage the Varroa mite themselves. And as they reproduce, as Ollie was explaining to us there in swarms, those bees that are able to manage the mite have been reproducing and passing on the skills to handle the mite to the new colony. So over the last year or so, we're actually seeing an increase now in the number of wild hives of bees, of honeybees around the country, we think. And that's what this survey is all about. They want to get some numbers on it, the researchers in NUI Galway. And they're asking people to keep an eye open for any colonies of bees that they see in the wild. And I was on a dusk chorus walk last night in the grounds of Kilkenny Castle, and there'll be more on that next week. But during that walk, we passed two massive big barn owl boxes that have been put up by Birdwatch Ireland for the barn owls. And in both of those boxes, the bees, honeybees had moved in and had made a nest or made a hive within the box. So they'd kind of taken over the box. So there's two wild colonies in Kilkenny Castle that we know of. There may be more. So you can find out more details on this. It's being funded by the Department of Ag, and it's been run by NUIG. So if you do a search for wild bee colony survey, you should be able to find that, or you can get more details on the NUIG website. Now, we better take a second ad break, and coming up after the break, I'm going to be talking to well-known gardener and garden writer Klaus Leitinger in Leitrim, and we'll be hearing about what he's getting up to at the moment, and also the work that Klaus has done recently in some of his travels. So we'll be back just after this. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm live here every Friday from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. While I'm in the studio, I'd love to hear from you, so please feel free to get in touch. The easiest way is to drop me a text, 086 353 7782, and that'll pop up on the screen in front of me. And thank you to those who have gotten in touch, and thanks very much for the messages to say welcome back. It's been a bit of a break last weekend, but we're back in full production now, so thank you very much for that message. Now, I'm joined on the line by Klaus Leitenberger, and I would have spoken to Klaus a few times at some of the garden shows around Ireland. Very well known writer and contributor to the Irish Garden magazine. Klaus, hi, how are you?
Hello, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Good, good, good. Thanks a million for joining us on the show today, Klaus.
Perfect, I'm looking forward to it.
Now, you're a busy, busy man, Klaus. You're the author of three vegetable gardening books. You are head gardener at the Organic Centre in County Leitrim. You've restored a number of gardens around Ireland, including the one up at Lissadell House in County Sligo.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was a while ago, yeah. That was an exciting project.
Really? And beautiful location as well.
Beautiful, stunning, yeah. And it was a real finding the old treasures again, because that garden had been abandoned for about 40 years, one of the walled gardens, the kitchen garden, and the alpine garden was abandoned for 80 years. So it was quite a challenge to get it back to its original state.
I'm sure, but what an exciting project to be working on, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
A little like the lost gardens of Heligan that we hear about in the UK.
I've been to them, yeah, very much so.
Now, you're also a seed producer, though, Klaus, aren't you? And we should mention first that Klaus's seeds are available on his website, greenvegetableseeds.com. A time-consuming enough job, I'd say that, Klaus.
That's right, yeah. It's we're just looking to... We selected the best varieties for the Irish climate, so I've been trialing like 50 different types of beetroot or tomatoes, and we've limited down just to the ones that we feel are the best varieties for this climate.
Oh, very good, very good. But you were mentioning to me earlier on, Klaus, that you've been doing some travel of late.
That's right, yeah. I got a scholarship, the Nuffield Scholarship. Lord Nuffield was, he's the founder or was the owner of the Nuffield tractor and the Morris cars, and he didn't have any descendants, so he set up scholarships. And one of the scholarships was a farming scholarship. He felt that farmers and growers should go out exploring the world and learning from other people to have an open mind. So I was really lucky. I was one of five Irish scholars last year, and we traveled with a group of six people from all over the world. I traveled to Canada, America, Argentina, Chile, Holland, Italy, and then on my own I had to do another 3 weeks travel and I went to Peru, which was where I really wanted to go, and New Zealand and Bolivia as well, sorry.
That's amazing. That sounds like an amazing
journey. 10 weeks away, yeah. I was 50 last year, so I asked my wife if I can get 3 weeks off to go to Peru, and it worked out to be a 10-week trip because of the scholarship.
So do you have to pay back those 7 weeks in extra work around the place?
7 weeks, definitely. So my topic was I'm for many, many years, I'm in Leitrim still. I've been growing the lost crops of the Incas, which we all know that potato came from Peru, Bolivian border, Lake Titicaca area. I know the Irish claim it to be the Irish potato now, but it originally came from there, and I was growing loads of different other crops that came from that area, which are probably not well known at all here. And so I wanted to see how they grow in their natural habitats.
And do you think that there's an opportunity for those crops to be used here?
Yes, there definitely is on some. There's some, you might know the okra. It's O-C-A. It's not the okra. It's a tuber vegetable. Grows extremely well in Ireland, especially in the west of Ireland, I find. Produces smallish, delicious tubers. Mashua, have you heard of mashua?
No, I never have.
Mashua is a tuberous nasturtium. You probably know the garden nasturtium with the big orange or red flowers. The Incas actually bred that into tuber crop. Oh. So you can eat the tubers out of it. And when I was there in South America, the Chinese are buying them in large quantities for cancer prevention of the... it has anti-cancer properties, so it's a very promising crop. The most promising crop, and a friend of yours in Kilkenny, Pat Fitzgerald has planted over an acre of it in Ireland, the Yacon.
I have, yes. Pat's Yacon producing Yacon nearby in Stonyford.
Yeah, yeah. It's another crop that the Incas bred over before 1500s and developed. And it's a really sweet vegetable. It's a tuber that is sold as a fruit there in South America. So you peel it and you eat it, and it's a bit like a melon. But it doesn't, the sugar doesn't, the carbohydrates don't put on pounds for you. It contains what they call fructooligosaccharides. It's even healthy.
Mm.
So it's a sweetener that is good for you and good for your intestines. And yeah, that's a very promising crop.
Are any outlets making that available to the public now to buy? And
well, Pat Fitzgerald is now... I think he invested a good bit of money, I heard recently, to make that into a syrup.
A syrup,
and that syrup will then be available in health food shops and maybe for food processing companies. So if he succeeds there, we'll see lots of that crop around. It's also a very beautiful plant.
It is a very attractive plant to grow. I got a few of those off Pat a few years ago and grew them in the greenhouse here out at Growing Cottages. They were lovely.
Yeah. Another superfood crop is, we know that for many years, it's Jerusalem artichokes, which is a totally misnamed vegetable. Have you grown it?
Yes, nothing to do with Jerusalem and nothing to do with artichokes.
Nothing at all. The Native Americans, it's actually a North American crop, they call it sunroot, which is a much nicer name for it, isn't it?
It is much nicer.
Yeah, but I've done a lot of studies and work with them. I grew 10 different varieties of them last year down in Cork, and looking for smoother tubers, because that's their main handicap, really, that the tubers are too knobbly. But when you look into the literature, it really could be the new super crop. It's the best prebiotic food that we can eat. You know, we all know these bifidobacteria in yogurts, but this is the best vegetable for all. And in Germany, they call it the diabetic's potato.
Oh.
So if a diabetic would switch over to Jerusalem artichoke, it would be much better for them.
Okay, well, that's really interesting. And are you producing some of those for sale as well, Klaus, or are you just growing them?
Actually, no, I'm just experimenting. Trying to get as many varieties. I had 10 last year. We limited them down to 5 varieties, and I got 3 more different varieties this year. So just trying to find the best one for this.
Very good. Well,
I can see in other countries it's becoming more popular already. And if you've grown it, it's like a weed. It's the easiest vegetable to grow. I often say to gardeners, that's your test. If you fail to grow Jerusalem artichokes, you shouldn't become a gardener. It's the easiest crop you can ever grow. You just throw a tuber in the ground and then you have 30 the next 8 months later.
I get asked that all the time by people, particularly over the last couple of years, as more and more people are getting into growing their own food. What should I start with? I never suggested Jerusalem artichoke before, but I'll add that to the list now.
Yeah, you do. And it doesn't suffer from any pest or disease, except maybe slugs early in the year, but that's not a problem. And I always grow them in the same bed at the back of the garden, because they're going to be a terrible weed for the follow-on crop. So if you'll never manage to dig them all out. They're like potatoes in a way.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They always come back, but they are stronger than potatoes.
Mm.
So I have them grown for over 10 years in the same bed, year in, year out, and never a problem.
And do you give that a bit of a feed then after you've harvested them?
Yeah.
So you get volunteers then as well as the ones that you replant the following year?
Yeah.
And how do you prepare that to eat then, Klaus?
Oh, do you know, only last year found out you can eat them raw as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I never knew that. I used to, the nicest I think is in a soup for somebody starting off.
Mm.
Just take one or two tubers and blend it with other vegetables in a soup. You get that lovely flavor of the artichokes with it. Roasted, they're absolutely delicious. And last year I had them often just grated, like with a little bit of mayonnaise, salt and pepper, like you do celeriac or other.
Yes.
Yeah.
That sounds lovely. And what else is going on in the garden at this time of the year, Klaus, for anybody who's kind of trying to do a bit of food production themselves?
Yeah, it's May is the time, the busy month of the garden, isn't it? And it was so dry everywhere in the country now. it's a struggle now to get things to germinate. So we may have to water a little bit, but everything can be sown and planted at this time of the year, with the exception maybe of a few other, you know, broad beans, probably too late for them, and garlic, you'd be definitely too late if you have planted garlic now. But carrots, parsnips, beetroot, swede, anything could be sown at this time.
Even some salad crops, you'd be getting...
But what I recommend people is you get these lovely oriental salads like rocket and mitsuna and tatsoi and pak choi, all those. They love the Irish winter. They hate this time of year because they bolt, they go straight to seed. So I'd stick to lettuce, endive, chicories, which love, you know, they're much better during the summer months.
And leave the oriental ones then till maybe later.
And leave the oriental ones till about August again.
Okay. And then you'll have some salad crops over the winter to enjoy.
And then these orientals, then they're magic. They produce right through the winter. If anybody has a little cloche or a polytunnel, even just 2 square meters sown in September, planted in October, you can pick leaves right through the winter, right up to March the following year.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, that simple advice from Klaus is just a sample of what's available in the 3 books that Klaus has written, and they're widely available. I've seen those in shops, and they're also the advice is also available on Klaus's website, greenvegetableseeds.com, where he sells those seeds as well for mail order. So you should check out that. And I'm a follower of Klaus on social media, where he shares some fascinating posts and information. So you should check it out at Clayton Berger. At KLAITENBERGER on Twitter. Sorry for absolutely mangalizing your name several times today, Klaus. But thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for the invitation, and wish you all the best.
Thank you, Klaus. Thank you. And hopefully we'll talk to Klaus later in the year again to see how things are going in the garden. It's nice to kind of get a view from around the country, I think, to see how different people are getting on in their respected areas of the country. But here in Kilkenny, there are a few things that we could be doing in the garden this week. It is, as Klaus said, a very busy time of the year, and I've noticed that the weeds are really starting to grow like nobody's business. So if you don't get on top of them now, I'm afraid if you've set aside a little plot for growing some vegetables or fruit or salad crops, if you don't stay on top of the weeds at this time of the year, very soon they'll really outcompete whatever it is that you've planted. They'll be up around your waist or your eyeballs in no time, and it may get a little dispiriting. So try and stay on top of the weeds. How I find it works best is if you just do a little bit every day. So don't go out and set a target of working for half or a full day in the garden, because if you're like me, things will just get in the way and other people will kind of distract you and other jobs will distract you. So set aside a little bit of time, a little and often, I think, in the garden. So stay on top of the weeds. And there, you should also round about now, if you're into your summer bedding plants, now is the time of the year to be getting those in the ground. And I've left my spring bulbs, so all of the bulbs that flowered earlier in the year, so the daffodils, they've been long gone now and have died right back. And we're almost at the stage now where I'll run the lawnmower over those, that the ones that were planted on the edges of the lawns out at Crowan. So another week or so for that, and once they've completely died back and gone all yellow, they've gathered all of the goodness that they're going to this year and stored that in the bulbs, and those bulbs will produce the flowers that we enjoy so much next spring. So leave them until they're gone completely yellow, and then you can cut them back. And if you have noticed any of your daffodils really, really, really congested, that will be a good time to kind of lift them up, separate out the bulbs, and put back half in the spot that was there, and then you have some extra bulbs to use elsewhere in the garden. But we have run out of time, so that's the only jobs you're going to get this week. I'll be back at the same time next week from 4 to 5, and you can keep in touch with me during the week on Twitter at Nesbitt F. I'll talk to you next week.